This Thursday will be a rare day indeed. You may have heard that Hanukkah and Thanksgiving are the same day this time. The last time that happened was actually in 1888, because at that time, Thanksgiving was the last Thursday of November, and now it's the fourth. So it did happen once before in 1888. And it's going to happen again, apparently, in 79,811 years. You know, Unitarian Universalists are great syncretists, and we quite commonly mash together Hanukkah with Christmas because of the Festival of Lights and the lights coming at the solstice and all that stuff. But getting Hanukkah together with Thanksgiving is something that actually I don't think no living Unitarian Universalist has ever had to do before. And there's a tremendously huge probability that no one will have to do it again. At least not for 79,811 years. There has been one attempt at this kind of syncretism. I don't know if you've seen the Minerki. You know, it's a turkey whose feathers hold each of the candles. And I'm thinking, now talk about something you're only going to use once. You know. But there it is. And 79,811 years. Not 79,812, but 79,811. Wow. I thought of that if you bought a Megabucks ticket every day for the next 79,811 years, there's a really good chance you would win sometime during that 79,811 years. It's older than my arrowhead. It's an amazing length of time, yet it's a finite length of time. You wait long enough, change the batteries a few times, it will come, assuming that the world is still spinning on its axis and we can still gauge what a year and a day is, which is admittedly uncertain. But during that time, just think of all the things that are almost everything you can think of could happen during that time. The Cubs could win the World Series during many times during that time. But even that's such an immense amount of time for us humans. And it's so much less than that for the Earth. And it's so much less than that for the universe. And there are things that happen every year. The turning of the seasons and so forth. There are things that happen commonly as we are born and live our lives and die. But there are other things that happen quite uncommonly, like the confluence of Hanukkah and Thanksgiving. And that ground ball that went through Bill Buckner's legs in 86. Most of the time he would have made that play. But he didn't that time. And forever after he didn't make that play. When I think of the events 50 years ago that we have been recalling and recounting and remembering, I think one of the things that causes us to go back to that time again and again, over and above the tragedy that it brought to a family, a nation, and the world, was the incredible improbability of it all. That all these things would have had to come together. And if it was to be played out again and again, how differently it might have been played out each time. that this shot might have been awry, or that the car might have been going faster or slower, or someone would have taken a turn this way rather than that, and all of human history be changed. Of course, in the proclamations of our presidents like Washington and Lincoln, it was common then to use the terms of divine providence and divine will and so forth. And I think one of the things they were grasping for in those metaphors was to understand, yes, in one logical sense, it's all God's will, if there's a God and a will, but that some of those events are so improbable that we want to think that there is a special something that has caused them to transpire for good or for ill. And I have never really been able to discern the difference between divine providence and the laws of probability. Though I do recall that Einstein, far brighter than I, said that God does not play dice with the universe. Hanukkah, in some way, is the inverse of Thanksgiving, because Hanukkah is the time when the native peoples rejoice for having repelled the invader. And Thanksgiving is the time when the invaders rejoice for having been allowed by the natives to survive. And both events attributed to divine providence. Though I think it helps divine providence if you have a leader whose nickname is the hammer. I do think the Maccabeans helped along divine providence just a bit. But what about the divine providence for the invaders of this country after the explorers and the treasure seekers came to this land and left and died off? How improbable that those who survived were in many ways physically and by experience the least likely to have been able to survive. We know those first Europeans who came here didn't stay, whether they were the Norsemen or the Spanish or the French or the English explorer for gold and spices. There were colonies, the Lost Colony, Jamestown, and so forth. None really perhaps left that much of a legacy, and then one did that we call the Pilgrims. And as I said, in many ways, apparently less able and less likely to survive than the others, which they credited their survival to divine providence. And if it were divine providence, then this time it was delivered by a member of the natives' tribe called the Samosets, and his name was Squanto. Now, we think of Squanto as being this kind of benevolent, peaceful, even kind of passive guy who just taught the pilgrims stuff like plant corn when leaves are the size of squirrels' ears. Bury a fish with the seeds of corn. I always thought Squanto is held in somewhat less esteem because his name was Squanto. If it was Tecumseh or Geronimo or Cochise or Sitting Bull, I think you would think of him as a little more chi-ridden. But really, Squanto was a lot more interesting than just the guy who taught the pilgrims how to survive. And now maybe that movie 12 Years a Slave has come out, maybe a good rousing movie will come out about Squanto, because there's certainly one there to be written. 10 years before the first Thanksgiving, a young man named Squanto lived down
below Cape Cod with his family and his tribe, and he met with some English explorers who began to teach him their language. They gave him clothing and tools, and in exchange he guided them through the area. And then, in exchange for helping them to find their way through the new land, they took him captive, a man named George Weymouth, who left his name to one of the towns nearby. And when he went back to England, the people who took him captive put him on display in theaters and circuses. For 4 years, this was his life. And then he persuaded an explorer, whose name may be familiar to you, a man named John Smith, to take him back to his native land. But before this could be accomplished, John Smith's partner, Thomas Hunt, stole Squanto and tried to sell him into slavery in Spain. And it was in Spain, as he was about to be sold into slavery, that he was bought instead by Franciscan friars, who converted him to Christianity, told him about their Jesus and what Jesus did and believed, and showed him what Jesus had taught them by their kindness. And through their good offices, he was returned to England, whereupon a man named John Slaney took him not as his slave, but as his servant, again showed him kindness, and brought him back to his land. By 1619, Squanto had been gone about 5 or 6 years. He was eager to see his family and his friends, so he went back to that clearing down below Cape Cod, to what had been his homeland, and his family was gone, every one of them. His whole tribe was gone, every one of them. He went to a neighboring tribe, the Wampanoag, who told them that his whole tribe had been wiped out by those English who had taken him captive, not through weapons, but through disease that they brought with them, and that now he was the last of the Samosets, and he lived sadly with the Wampanoags, the last of his family. The next year, more white people came into that clearing below the Cape, which had been his home. Think of what Squanto must have felt. Here were yet more people, like those who had taken him captive, those who had tried to sell him into slavery, those who had put him on display as an animal in the zoo, those whose diseases had wiped out his tribe. And now there were more of them, and he waited. He waited all through that first winter, and he saw many of them, half of them, die. And he must have known that as that second winter approached, that none of them would survive another winter, that soon they would suffer the fate of his tribe. So what did Squanto do? He came out of the woods into the clearing and presented himself to the white people and spoke their language to them. Now here's divine providence for you. You and your family came to this new land and didn't know anything about it or how to survive. All you knew is that during the first winter, half of you died, and it was getting to be winter again. And out comes a guy who says, "Hello, and speaks your language and says, anything I can do to help? When I was in Paris, I was happy to find somebody to speak my language. Imagine how these guys felt. That's why they used the term divine providence. What were the chances that just when they were going to die, a guy came out of the forest and spoke English and said, this is how you eat that corn? What were the chances? Somewhere in his heart, he remembered not being put on display, not being taken into slavery, not having his whole tribe destroyed. What he remembered was what the Franciscans had taught him. Squanto helped those pilgrims because he knew that all people, regardless of where they came from, what they looked like, what they had done, what they might do, deserved a chance to live. He knew that no matter what he had been through, his life needed to be lived according to what the Franciscans had taught him. How could he abandon these new people who were now suffering on this land and allow even more people and more families to die upon it? At that first Thanksgiving, there were about 50 surviving pilgrims, and there were about 90 Indians. Squanto helped the Indians and pilgrims to get along and make peace. As long as he lived, there were no wars between them. Among the many things to be thankful for at this time of year, we ought to be thankful for the love and compassion and forgiveness that lived in Squanto's heart. We ought to perhaps also be thankful for that divine roll of the dice that brought Squanto and the pilgrims together, and be thankful for those Franciscans who taught Squanto what was really in his heart. May the love and compassion that found a home in Squanto's heart and which allowed a new people to find a life in his family's land, may this love and compassion also find a home in your heart. May we join together in our closing hymn, number 6.